This is Penn State, where I work, and it's the Milton S. Hershey Medical Center. And it's very pretty this time of year. And some of you may know it was started with funding from Hershey Chocolate, so just keep eating all the chocolate you can. okay, so just this button. And I'm going to talk today about epidural analgesia during labor and adverse outcomes. And we did a large-scale observational study of women, 3,000 women. I have no financial relationships to disclose. And so we looked at that in the data. As some of you may know, epidural use has increased dramatically over the last two decades. It used to be not that common to use an epidural, and it used to, one of the reasons why it was not that common was that there was not necessarily an anesthesiologist in the house that could administer it. And in 2006, the Listening to Mothers survey asked women about their epidural or spinal analgesia use, and 76% said that they used, they had an epidural during their labor. And the reason why it is becoming very popular is that it works very well and is probably is the most effective pain relief method in labor and delivery. And initially, when it wasn't available everywhere, there was a big call for making sure it was available everywhere. However, we actually don't know a lot about potential adverse effects of epidural during labor. And what we do know is from randomized, what we do know is from randomized controlled clinical trials, but those studies have a lot of flaws. One is that they have a high refusal rate, and if someone, if you were, they always ask women during labor, and if someone came to you in labor and said, do you want to be randomized to epidural or not, you would probably not want to participate. So they have upwards of 95% refusal rate. They only include the healthiest women, so if women have hypertension or other complications, they are usually not included in the randomized clinical trials. Usually they're pretty small sample size. They're very carefully controlled, specific dose, specific timing of dose, specific method of administration, and so forth. So they have a lot of limitations. The biggest limitation, though, is that there's a high crossover rate. Even if they get women to say, yes, I'll participate in your study, they get a lot of women crossing over, most often from the control group to the treatment group. And crossover rates are upwards of 60% in some studies. If you were in labor and you were randomized to the non-epidural group, there's a good chance you would say, well, I think I'll skip this study and have the epidural. On the other hand, there are women who are randomized to the epidural and they go so quickly, they have such easy labors that they don't end up needing it. And however, these randomized control trials use intention to treat, and when they sum up their results, and that just obscures the results. When there's a high crossover rate, then the treatment and the controls get lumped together and in both groups, and they end up looking equivalent even though they're not equivalent. And the randomized clinical trials are powered to measure pain relief, and since pain relief is such a huge effect of epidural, they tend to be small sample size studies. They're not powered to measure safety, and they don't look closely at safety sorts of issues. So we thought we'd look at that in the first baby study. And the first baby study was funded by NICHD, and we enrolled 3,006 women during their pregnancies before they delivered their first babies. And they all had singleton births, aged 18 to 35. They delivered in 2000 to 2011. And they delivered at 76 hospitals throughout Pennsylvania. We worked really hard to try to enroll minority and low-income women to this study. And we asked the women which of the following were used at any time before you delivered your baby to make you feel more comfortable and relieve your pain. And this was an item from the Listening to Mother surveys. We asked women to tell us specifically what they used, and then we coded them into categories. And the most common was epidural alone, and second, epidural and other drugs. So 86.9% had an epidural. That's a pretty high rate. We had 153 women who used narcotics or some other medication, and 220 women who used no pain medication. And we found that women who labored, among those who labored, if they had an epidural, they labored an average of 15 hours, and those who didn't have an epidural labored an average of 8.6 hours. So there was a substantial difference in hours in labor. We found that among the women who had an epidural, they were more likely to receive oxytocin for labor augmentation than women who didn't have an epidural. And the women who had an epidural were more likely to have an unplanned cesarean delivery than the women who didn't have an epidural. And women who had an epidural were more likely to have fetal distress during the labor, 23.9% versus 13.4%, and more likely to have a low Apgar score baby. So what does this mean? And it doesn't necessarily mean that epidural has caused these outcomes. There's a variety of scenarios. It could be that women who have dystocia, then long and painful labor and the baby's not moving very quickly, ask for an epidural, and that it's really the dystocia that is causing the bad outcomes, not the epidural. It could be that the epidural leads to dystocia, and both lead to the bad outcomes. And there have been a couple of studies that have found that women who have epidural are more likely to then go on to experience dystocia, so that's a possibility. There are a lot of confounding factors that could explain these results. Labor induction is important, and we did find that the women who were induced were much more likely to have an epidural. The size of the baby, maternal height, maternal age, the type of labor support, body mass index, fear of childbirth, all of those things could enter in. So what would be the ideal study of this issue? We've already seen that the randomized clinical trials is not a good way to go. I don't think in terms of how to study this issue, because you really can't randomize women to epidural versus no epidural. And if you do manage to get a few women to agree to that, there's a high crossover rate, so that's not so good. So I think the ideal study is an observational study where you follow women and actually measure the dose of epidural and how long it was administered, and measure oxytocin for induction and augmentation, because that certainly is potential confounding variable or the cause of one or more poor outcomes. Measure relevant confounding factors and measure when in labor the epidural was begun, and then do propensity score matching. So we actually are hoping one day to be able to do that study. We need to go back and get that information from the medical records, which means we need to get more funding to go back and do that. So I thought if any of you have any thoughts or suggestions or any other study ideas about how to look at this issue, I'd be happy to hear them. And thank you. Yes. We have not published it yet. Are you in a hurry? Yeah, I think probably within the next year we'll get this out. Yes. We do. We actually asked tons of questions and a lot of open-ended questions. And we did find that the women, a lot of women reported that they kind of felt pushed into having an epidural. And a lot of women reported that as soon as they got to the hospital, they were asked, "You want your epidural?" And we also asked the women before, in the baseline interview during the pregnancy, what they plan to have. And the women who reported that they plan to have an epidural, 98% got an epidural. So that was the biggest predictor of whether or not they had an epidural was whether they planned to have an epidural. So. Yes. We did, and the women who had who went through the natural birth process were substantially less likely to have an epidural, but still even 50% of them had an epidural. We did, yeah. We looked at everything, actually. But if they had a doula, they were much less likely to have an epidural. It was around 10 or 11%, I think. If they had a midwife, they were almost the same as if they had a physician.
Not a fake deal, and they got the token. And we, as far as we were concerned, that was
Yes, we have looked at that, and that's exactly how we do define induction. And we did have, I think it was around 35% were induced by those, by that definition, yeah. Yes. The women who said they did not want an epidural, 50% had an epidural. Yes. Physician in labor? We did look at that, and that actually was not associated. We asked the women if they could walk during labor. I'd like to look at that more closely in the medical records.
Dr. Wood has a question.
Yes.
I was wondering if you knew anything about hospital type, or like if it was like a private hospital, for profit hospital versus a nonprofit, or if you knew anything about the hospital type.
Oh, okay. The question was, do we know anything about the hospital type? We do. We know. We have all the data about the each 76 hospitals, the size and ownership and teaching status and so forth. So, but we haven't looked at that. So that's
really
a good question. Yeah.
To look at ownership in particular.
Yeah.
See if that makes a difference.
Yeah.
The private nonprofit hospitals are more likely to give us a dural too, as opposed to the nonprofit or teaching hospitals.
Yeah. Okay. I will look at that. Yes.
Did you look at prenatal education?
We did. Yes. Surprisingly, I felt like they'd all, for these first babies, they'd all take courses and so forth. But I think only about 60% did. And we looked at whether they had like Lamaze training or that sort of thing, and that was the group of women who were pretty much determined not to have an epidural, and 50% of them did have an epidural. So yes. Oh, we have not looked at that yet, but that's a good question. We could definitely look at that. Well, thank you. Oh, yes.
I was wondering, I know that you mentioned that the women who had an epidural afterwards and then were lower. Do you have any data that shows whether the women were lower than the epidural patients, and if they had they were
if the...
If there was a need for resuscitation?
Oh, yes. Yes, we did find a difference in resuscitation. I didn't present that because I want to double check those numbers, but that's an important outcome to look at. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Let's give a round of applause for our group.